Welcome to Attack of Opportunity.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Attack of Opportunity. Today we are branching out, not an actual play podcast, not a talk show, not about RPG, but something definitely in the slightly fantasy fiction world. We are talking to JV Torres, published author, and has turned his book into an audiobook podcast, which we are now hosting on our network because we've gotten chummy. And he is one of our first guinea pigs where he has his own feed, he has his own podcast, he has his own set of rules, but he has shared that feed with us and we've taken it and thrown it up with all our hosts for more exposure for him. And he has a very interesting story to tell. But first, let's meet the man. Jay, can we call you JV, or how would you like to be? JV? Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show with us today.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
So my first question usually for tabletop nerds is, how did you first know you were a geek, a nerd, one of us? But you're a very special kind of nerd, geek. How did you first know that you wanted to enter the world of writing a fiction, which, you know, of course, and our follow-up questions is usually what we call the gateway drug for playing D&D and stuff like that. But how did you first know that you wanted to get into the world of, shall we say, make-believe?
Make-believe? Probably in school when I got picked on a lot. And a lot of my friends were the nerds, the geeks. So I was kind of on the fringe of even that group of folks. But I've been mostly a loner my whole life. And that's kind of how I got into the make-believe world, because since I couldn't, you know, be a part of that in crowd or whatever, then I would just create my own in crowd. Mm-hmm.
Was there a defining moment for you, or like a gateway drug? We talk about a certain book that you read or a video game or something. There's usually something that somebody gets really attached to. Outside your social circle and personal circumstances, was there a book, an author, a teacher, you know, something in those early years while you were deciding you were one of us, that really inspired you?
Oh, sure. No, I read a lot of the great novelists. I was particularly fond of Ernest Hemingway. Mm-hmm. Like the old Charles Dickens novels, and read Mark Twain, people like that. As I got into high school, some of my high school teachers were always putting the classics for us to read. I don't think they do that so much anymore in schools.
It sounds like they're coming to get you. He told me you live downtown in a major metropolis. How long have you been writing? How long have you been a writer?
My whole life. I think ever since I've been able to write, since I've been able to hold a pencil, I think I've been writing. I was writing journals like everybody, when they were kids. And I started writing novels probably in middle school. And of course, they weren't very well-organized novels, and I wrote them in a notebook. But once I was in high school, I think I might have written about 3 or 4 novels inside of a composition book in high school.
I remember an English teacher in my high school that struck me with something that I, to this day, found very profound. It was an English writing class that I had joined. And everyone knows my spelling, my grammar, my use of the English language is absolutely terrible. but everyone was always impressed by my imagination, pure gall at my ideas. And the English teacher told the class, we were talking about writing, and he says, if you write every day, and it's not a, this is the discipline, I'm an English teacher, and you crack the whip, whoosh, you're all going to be writers, and, if you write every day, you must write a page a day, and you sit there staring at a page. He says, if you wake up, and you want to write, and you find yourself with pen in hand doing it, or playing around with it, or wanting to it, he says, then you're a writer. Simple as that. Doesn't matter what you write, if you write for yourself, if you write for your family, if you get published, if you're putting pen to paper, because we had computers kind of back then, if that's what you just get up wanting to do, and if you think about it, if it dominates your thoughts in the day, guess what, guys? You're a writer. And it really struck me as profound, because I wanted to create something, but I was terrible at, my brain going too fast for the page kind of thing. So until I found something like this to unleash creativity, it was a uphill climb for me. Did you find that, like I said, you were writing since day one, you were in high school, you mentioned, you had books down. What became of this writing? Was it something for yourself? I mean, even Tolkien, who wrote Lord of the Rings, was part of this gentleman's club, and they all wrote novelitia, and they looked at what he was writing, and they thought, what are you doing, dude? And he's like, I write for myself. He was actually quoted on this. He's like, I don't write for you. I'm part of this writing club, but I don't write for you. I don't write for the public. He says, I write for myself, and I want to shape this story. And now, years later, you know, he's a household name in the fantasy world. So let's dial back to young Torres. Were you writing for yourself? Were you part of a gentleman's club?
Funny you mentioned that. I think I wrote for both. I wrote for myself, and then I wrote to prove to others that I could do it. And I know when I was in high school, it was one of the few things that I could do where the teachers really were impressed with. I mean, I've had many teachers tell me growing up, you know, that I had a knack for writing. Mm-hmm. And when I just got out of high school, I started writing letters to the editor of the Miami Herald, and they would actually publish them. And that was a real thrill for me, you know. It wasn't until I was in my first year in college, I was encouraged by one of the counselors who's a Mexican-American like me. And so, like, you know, when you're in a Mexican-American community that just doesn't, there wasn't always a lot of encouragement academically.
Yeah.
I'm just going to leave it there, okay?
Yeah, yeah, no, but, that's fine. I'm trying so hard not to mention one of my, American idols, Cheech Marin, who I absolutely adore, brilliant man. But I want to mention him for the right reason, not the wrong reasons. So,
right. No, she was this woman. She was incredible, and she was really trying to get me to harness this ability that I had. She goes, you know, there's this big essay contest. You'll get a scholarship for the college, and blah blah blah. You get to have lunch with the mayor of Miami and all this other stuff. And I'm like, okay, you know, well, I got nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. So I entered this essay contest. You know, I had something to do with humanities, and I actually won this thing.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I represented the college, and I had lunch with the mayor, and they gave me this scholarship to continue my studies. And that's when I knew, that's when I really knew that I could really turn this into something. But I've always felt like I just didn't have enough experience in life to produce anything that I think would people would want to read. So here I am in my 40s, and I think the time is right.
Yeah. A lot of people say write what you know, you know, and I recently came across talking with other DMs about DM tips. And mm-hmm. This is something that personally I would never, even though I've DM'd for over 30 years, I would never really approach this is how I think you should DM, blah, 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 blah. Because truth is truth. And then there's your experience. And for a writer, you could write what you know, or I'm assuming, not really being a writer, hope I'm not talking above my creative pay grade to you here, sir. Writing how you see the world. If that makes sense, you know, yeah. the through the child's eye type of thing. You've been writing since you were a young teen in grade school, and now standing beside the mayor and going, let's do lunch. You know,
yeah.
What a great moment for you, as well as all of, you know, that's really cool. Now you're in your 40s, like myself, and you are writing your own content. And this is why we want to talk to you today. Let me just throw up now, talking about putting up a red flag. I like this flag. But I'm Canadian, and I don't suffer from the American sensitivity of what one does with one's American flag. And we're looking at a picture of a revamp of the American flag with the blue in the left corner. But instead of stars, it has a white crown, and you have the red and white stripes. And I think this is a very creative idea of what you're trying to sell, because the idea of your book is, what if America, after a certain war and time period, had reverted into a monarchy as opposed to continued on, like with the current day? It's an alternate America. Now, alternate Americas are huge in video game. In the video game industry, the broken down America, the steampunk America, the alternate, you know, we never got this energy source, we followed that energy source, which changed our world America. They're very huge. They're very big. So I'd like to present JV Torres to the world through our show, that the man has a creative vision and a very, very cool fiction look of an alternate America. And he has a book, and it's a podcast, and it's an audiobook, and we are plugging it today. And can you tell us the title of the series, sir?
Sure. It's called The Rise of King Asylus. And what King Asylus is basically a soldier who rises to the rank of general. And during America's Second Civil War, which happens when the states fracture because they want to secede from the United States for ideological reasons or whatever, really turns out to be a very intricate plot that was initiated by foreign interests. And so the last president of the United States gives Silas all this power to kind of try to reunify the country. Mm. But as you start to delve into the story, you realize that Silas and the president and all these people are all in cahoots together. They're all part of this secret society, if you will, this Illuminati type group of people. And so they've decided, you know what, we're going to do away with politics. This is becoming too chaotic with, you know, a two-party system. We're just going to put We can't use a dictator because that's too unpopular. We'll make this glorified king, figurehead king, and we'll put him in power, reunify the country, and he's our guy, basically, because he's one of us. Mm-hmm. So Silas becomes this leader, this king of America. And the first thing he does is, you know, he tells him, well, I can't make all the changes you guys want until you give me absolute power. So they do that, to give him absolute power. And the first thing he does is go after the very people who put him in there. And so this becomes a sets this chain reaction of Silas versus all of his former buddies in his Illuminati group. And so they try to kill him. And the entire first and second season of this show is all about him trying to get to them, them trying to get to him. And it's really a matter of who's the good guy or who's the bad guy. And I think some of the debate that has happened on Twitter and Reddit and some other sites that people who actually take the time to, you know, look and analyze this story to try to break down what's happening, mm-hmm. they have a real difficult time deciding whether there is a good guy in the story. And I think there are some people that, I think some people side with the king because he says all the right things, but then he does all the evil things. So
show me a politically correct spy movie or government movie where, you know, there's government shadow organizations that are doing the wrong thing, but even the organizations, the legal ones that are fixing it or whatever, have to step beyond the public eye and do some, shall we say, I wouldn't say immoral or amoral, but, you know, get shit done for America. Let's get it done, you know. Well, we don't want to dig into the plot too much. Like, we want to tease, we want to tell, we want to intrigue. I don't want you spilling the guts of the whole book here. I'm very tempted not to quote a bunch of Star Wars with Jar Jar going, and we grant emergency powers to the Chancellor, and you've got, you know, King Asas, I mean Palpatine up there going, I love democracy, and I will lay down this power, you know. But you've already told us that he's walking a line where he pulls, like, gets rid of former friends. I believe Hitler did that, as well as gets rid of Illuminati, which is a huge group of influence that could, you know, make him a puppet. And if they're gone, then he actually is calling the shots for good or ill. He is in control. It's not a puppet regime.
That's one of the great things about this story is that no matter how much you learn about the plot or the storyline, it always raises more questions than it answers.
Ooh.
And so then you're always left with how exactly is he able to pull this off? How is he able to do this? And so I kind of put the breadcrumbs along the trail so that people keep wanting more and more and more. And it's just kind of just become a really epic story.
So let me ask you, what, as opposed to just writing a book, and putting it on, you know, like the proverbial bookshelf, trying to get it published, what made you make the decision to become a, what we call a content creator, and make it an audiobook and put it up as a podcast as well?
Well, just for clarification, Jeff, the book isn't out yet, and neither is the audiobook. And the reason why I decided to do it essentially in reverse is because I listened to a lot of different podcasts leading up to creating this a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And what I learned was that podcasters are able to generate their own audience long before they ever released any purchasable content. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the gist of this, was that I wanted to present to people a story that had so much, you know, so much detail and so much curiosity that they would want to read the book, because the book is essentially what you don't understand or what you miss from the story in the podcast, not because it's not there, but because I don't really go into the details of it. The gaps.
Oh, okay. Sorry, my bad. Yeah.
The gaps are in the novel.
Yeah.
And if you just read the novel and you're like, hey, this is a great novel, but I have questions about this and this, those things are in the podcast.
Yeah.
So they are parallel to each other in storyline, only on the timeline of things and on the main details. But all the, like, the characters' reactions and the characters' backstories, mm-hmm. and, well, you know, what happened between when the king did this and the king did that, there's this gap. So all of that is in the novel.
Oh, yeah. No, it's like you're releasing the Harry Potter movies and then the books for, like, the deep explanation. You know, you can get away with the podcast. The story is there. We're not talking about a bunch of trailers. You're not talking about a bunch of hype. You know, I've listened to a couple of them, and there's story there. And like you said, it raises questions. And then the release date of your book is when?
Well, as you sent me this message this morning to do this, I was actually finishing up some of the final chapters in the final, I'm in the final edit stages. So I'm looking sometime late August, early September. It should be out before.
Almost as if we planned it that way. hey, you know, we don't want to end a podcast with you holding up a book going, oh, by the way, and buy my book. We're talking about an idea. The man has a podcast out there. You got to listen to it. It's definitely original, or we wouldn't put it under our banner. It falls into that wonderful alt-fiction America that's so popular these days. And if you're interested, the book's coming out. You should check it out. So, but all joking aside, Endgame, you know, is the book. Where can they find it? Where could you actually purchase our, you know, like the audiobook copy or the actual hardcover?
Well, I know we're going to run everything through Amazon, but everything will be able to be found on our website, which is theriseofkingofsilas.com. And maybe you can put that somewhere in the
Definitely. Like through, scroll the credits, the music we use, you know, who everybody is, links that answer questions going, well, we're, you know, because we don't just flash it on the screen. Buy now. You know, the Shamway deal is ending soon. Taurus is in his late 40s. He doesn't have longer for this earth. He's all up in his head. But getting back to the show, was there a specific inspiration to choose this type of fiction that got you into an alternate American history?
I think, well, you know, I'd be lying if I said the current political climate didn't have something to do with it. Clearly, I think the world is changing politically. I don't know where it's going. I don't think anybody does. But I definitely like to play in this fantasy that, well, if it did go this route, maybe this would happen. And if, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening in the story that are part of what I truly think, and then there's some that's just out there in left field. For example, there's a real paranormal component to the story, you know, where the king actually has these arguments with Satan, right?
Well, Illuminati is one step away, right?
He's literally arguing with the devil, and this is to me, this is, those are probably the most fun things for me to do because I play both characters. I play the devil and I play his life. So when I work that dialogue, that exchange between those two, it's a tremendous amount of fun for me. It shouldn't be, but it is. And so, you know, because I'm devout Catholic. And
no, but you're talking about a story device where a man is facing a looming ultimate dark power. It could be a reflection of himself. You know, could be talking dark mirror. It could be something that no matter how powerful he is, there's something in your story element that is more powerful, you know, that could bring him down. I can see that there's a lot you could do with this. There's a really good scene, and I cannot remember the name of the movie, but Will Smith is under a bridge and one of his agents screws up and the guy walks like real London cobblestone brick mortar brick bridge, you know, and this arcing tunnel just goes on and the guy goes in there and there's Will Smith and he gets up on this little stage like a judge, smacks the hammer and starts talking to the guy, walking him through what mission he just did, what he screwed up, how he's going to adjudicate it. And you're wondering what's going on. And then Smith starts raising his voice and this shadow starts going up the wall as the actor gets angry. And you're like, holy crap, he's talking to the devil. Right? And then he tones it down and gives the guy proper crap and off you go and don't screw up again or else, you know, served, right? And just the idea of something nasty under a bridge, away from the public eye, the shadow looming, and just one actor going on and on at this back and forth. And there is a dialogue with him and the other actor. But like you said, your main character gets into an argument or something with the devil or whatever. There's like, you know, 100 ways to paint it. I brought this up to talk about like beyond the religious aspect. It's a plot device, people. It will reflect something that Taurus is digging in about such a powerful character. And supernatural spin on things these days is a little bit more lighthearted. It's geeky. It's not as serious as, you know, as a lot of people are taking this day. So have you got anything else in the works? I mean, we're here obviously to talk about your up and coming book, The Rise of King of Silas, and you've been writing for such a long time. Have you got any other projects going?
Well, actually, just one what has to do with the story, and then I'll tell you about the other one.
Sure.
And that is, there's a short film that we're doing about The Rise of King of Silas, and it's called The Ordo.
Oh, cool.
And it's a little window into that secret society of theirs. It's called The Ordo. And that is something we worked on since the spring. And it's, you know, when you work with actors and the director's kind of, he's got a million other projects going on. So it's kind of slow. We were hoping to have it out by now, but probably as the book is coming out, that short movie is going to come out. It's about 10 minutes long. Okay. But the other book that I'm working on is something called Transforming Man, and it's about this really, really heavy-set person, an obese person who wakes up one day and decides he's going to lose weight. And without giving too much away, what he ends up doing is he finds this really simple elliptical machine and this really odd, vague book. And he starts reading this book and he starts doing these 10, 15-minute workouts. And within a matter of a couple of weeks, he literally transforms into this, you know, Fabio, really buff. And so he shows up at his sister's birthday party, and everybody there was wondering who this guy was. And he's like, I'm your brother. She goes, you're my brother. And so everybody's really like blown away by how did you do this? Like, this is incredible. Like, you were like this really big dude, and now you're like this really chiseled out of stone statue dude, right? Well, he starts telling him about, you know, you gotta tell us what your secret is. So this gets picked up by one of the local news people, and so they showed a before and after photograph, right? And so he's telling the people about what he was doing, and so that got picked up by a national media, and so they were running the story, and they were trying to figure out how this guy was able to transform himself within such a short amount of time. And before he knew it, he had become extremely popular, and he was famous. He went viral. And so they were trying to get him to talk more about this in one of these Ellen type shows, and he's like, well, you know, he's telling him about the elliptical machine, he's telling him about this book. She goes, but there's got to be something else. That's too simple. It just can't be that. What book are you reading? So he tells him the title of this book, and she's looking around. It's like, well, has anybody heard about this book? And so then they try to investigate what this book is that he was reading, and it turns out this book didn't exist. And so they start to call him a fraud. And so he falls from grace, right, in the sense that, you know, here he was, and he had everybody hanging on his every word, and then all of a sudden they were questioning how he was able to do it, but it didn't change the fact that he had actually changed himself physically. And so that's where I'm going to stop right now.
Yeah, full credibility. This is where the book gets really good, right?
This is where that story is going.
No, yeah. The next question would be social media content outlets. Where can we find you? Now, obviously, since we've picked up your feed, you can find us. You can find The Rise of King Alice on our YouTube channel.
Who's Alice?
Sorry, yes. Rise of King Silas. Sorry. Told you, English not my spot. Yeah, I'm so bad with this.
Alice, that's the first. That's the first.
They're like, you want to do a talk show, but you barely speak English, but it's the only language I almost know. On our YouTube channel, the Rollmongers Podcasting Network, but our main go-to is a podcast, and we've picked up JV Taurus's feed, and you can find us on SoundCloud, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Speaker, Stitcher. The list goes on. Podcaster, we are everywhere. Podbean. For The Rise of King Asylus. But if you want to go to the source, I believe we can also find you where, sir?
Well, we're actually at kingasylus.buzzsprout.com. Mm-hmm. That's direct link to the host of the show, who's hosting the show. Mm-hmm. But our main go-to is iTunes always. Riseofkingasylus.com. Radio Public is our other big pusher. Spotify is another one.
Off the air, we were joking about trading T-shirts and propping each other up. But did you have merchandise in the works or as of yet?
We do. We have stuff on TeePublic, and that also can be found on our website. If you're on Twitter, look us up at King of Silas. We're always posting stuff about some. Actually, we're giving stuff away this summer. So, Jeff, you can be looking for something in your mailbox soon.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you drink coffee?
Yeah, my wife does.
You don't drink coffee?
I drink tea. No. Maybe it's my half British, one quarter Scottish side through the family or whatever. But I'm a tea granny. The wife lives on Canadian Tim Hortons coffee.
I tell you what, I'll send you a T-shirt if you wear it on one of your shows.
Are you kidding me? I'll be wearing that a lot. I'll be wearing that a lot just because, like, hey, if JV Taurus, you know, wants to. Well, now, since we're talking about marketing, I'll tell you about, like, this idea I had. I don't know if anyone's going to believe me, but for bludgeoning, blossoming podcasters out there, okay, I have found an absolute free host called anchor.fm. A whole bunch of techno garden, but technically, I haven't looked at them too much, but technically you could just give them stuff and they put it up for free. So that's $0. And for someone who's low budget, that's great. Now, I myself started off whispered to me by someone I know, SoundCloud. Okay, that's $100. And if you could pay $16 a month, or I pay $140 Canadian a year for them to host my feed. But that's one little core of the market. Then we pay Spreaker, $35 a month. And Spreaker taps into Spotify, iHeartRadio, iTunes, and a bunch more, as well as makes a video for our YouTube as an audio file and sends it there. So I really like Spreaker. And also we pay $117 Canadian to Podbean a year. Now, most people be like, what are you doing? That's nuts. Why would you just pick a host and go? Now, we also have our own website now, rollmongers.com, where we'll embed one of those feeds. But our idea was, instead of trying to compete for a single large audience, let's hit every audience. And now we're even starting to live stream Raw on Twitch, which wasn't like, we preferred a polished product with ambient music and everything and like heavily edited and stuff. So you got like a really good radio show podcast, as opposed to just the it's happening Raw. But we are trying to approach the Twitch market as well. It occurred to me that someone like yourself, who is doing very well with his own website and his own feed, could tag team with us, or maybe someone that just starting out a podcast that has decent audio, please, that has some sort of fictional or RPG content and something that we could approve, could enter our Patreon at $5 tier. Now, this is, think about this. This is $60 Canadian or American a year. That's half of what you'd pay for a single feed, unless you want to go with Anchor, it's free. And you would instantly tap into our large listenership, all of our hosts, and thank you, JV Torres, for taking the chance. The guy has no reason to support, to, you know, to become one of our patrons, but he has. And for his $60 a year, we are singing his praises, singing far and wide or whatever. And why? Sure. Well, it helps us pay the bills. Sure, you know. But we're doing a bunch of this stuff for networking purposes. We've interviewed on Attack of Opportunity several people that are notable names, as well as people that no one knows them at all. And we don't care. We looked at their content and went, there's something about this content that we like, that we enjoy, that we want to share, that we want to help, right? Sure. We didn't just look at their followers or whatever. Now, I'm not going to lie. We recently interviewed some notable people, and we're just thrilled, you know, to have them on the show. Sure. But we've also looked into people that are just starting out, but there's something about the website. There's something about, you know, the way they presented themselves. And it's like, that's good content. And we want to, you know, reach behind, give them a sling, and catapult them forward. And we know some of these podcasters are going to do far better than our network, but we're just happy to be a part of it, getting to know each other, getting the networking. When I've spoke with you, we spoke 2 hours on my lunch breaks. The first day, just kind of like, hey, kind of thing.
My wife was giving me these looks like, who are you talking to?
Some crazy Canadian guy. Don't tell him where we live, honey. You know, that type of thing.
No, we feel the same way. I feel the same way, Jeff. We're gonna do what we can when the season kicks in October. We're kicking everything off for the third season and on Halloween. We're actually having we're gonna have a big premiere party here in Baltimore, and I'm inviting a bunch of people that are cast members and a lot of people who are fans of the show to come to that private event that we're gonna have. We're gonna try to stream it on Facebook or Twitter or maybe both. Just to kind of give people, you know, hey, you know, this is a lot bigger than you think. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are into this show. And we want to, you know, share that with some of the other people that we do, that we collaborate with, like your show, for example. Yeah. So if you have any literature, if you have any stickers or any cards or anything you want me to put out at these events where we go to, we'll be more than happy to do that.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Because like you said, you don't get anywhere unless you help the guy beside you or help the community. I've had some great help from Connor Besh, from Clinton's Core Classics, who used to be under a banner and went his own way, from Reeton, from ReetonEntertainment.com, who has a podcast about video games, also appeared beside us on the show and has gone off with their own, away from our banner, but their own show. From Michael Kusevin, Dead Aussie Gamer. I had the pleasure of meeting and working a short time with Guy Scalanders, a great GM. I recently met David Fry. And like I said, I'm not building this going, this is my street cred, look at all these famous people I know. I'm talking about big or small, people in the community are a lot friendlier than you'd think. And if you approach them the right way, of course, I always approach them the wrong way. Horrible texting and messaging, just, hey, can I want to talk to you? You find very open with opinions, with help, with advice, you know, sure, about what they're doing with their projects, about maybe they could help you, whatever, you know, on Facebook, on Messenger, certain systems. Cody Lewis has a great Facebook page called the IRA, and he talks about independent roleplay association and GMs and content creator stuff. They share ideas. It's not really a place to go, hey, here's my latest podcast episode. They share ideas and they go, what do you think about this? And they're talking at the DM level, or they're talking about the production level, or they're talking about even at the player level type of thing. And there's a lot of Facebook pages like that. You should look for them, where there's just a dialogue running. and great advice, great ideas to share. You know, there's a lot out here in the community, guys, just besides being a consumer where you just click on the next link that looks good, click on the next guy that looks funny, click on the next guy, you know, dig into the dialogue. There's so much to learn, and so much, you know, you can, so far you can get yourself if you want to be a content creator, as well as, you know, learn from the greats, as it were. They're really friendly people. It's all how you approach them. Don't approach them the way I have. I blew it right out of the gate. Too much spamming, too much, you know, gushing over people that I got so excited just to talk to. But I want to thank our guest today, JV Torres, for being on the show, for talking about his book, which is a podcast at the moment. But if you really want more than just the bare bones, you want to want more about this guy, his actual physical book and audiobook will be released soon. The Rise of King Asylus, which you can find with us and at riseofkingasylus.com. JV, thank you so much for being on the show today. Giving us your time. And we'll have your people call my people. We'll trade some t-shirts and we'll see what, you know, what cross marketing, what does, because it's fun. You got to do this for fun. You know,
one last question though. Do you have small children?
You
have small children?
No. My stepdaughter is married with three kids. My daughter got married, is off to Japan with a cast member. She married G. Tamlin.
Are there any small children in your orbit?
My son's going off to college this year. So,
I'm saying, I have a children's book that's out.
Oh, you know what? One of our cast members, Ashley Florence, has a young son. And when I was 5 or 6 for Christmas, my granddad, who's British, built an actual chalkboard, like from hand with wood, one for me and one for my older brother. And we came out this Christmas and there are these chalkboards that are, you know, X big, wrote on them, flipped them over. I've had this thing forever and kept it in the house waiting for someone. And they just came over to visit with the young lad who's about 6 or 7 now. And we gifted it to him. And to see a kid who was spent 5-20 minutes on mom's phone playing some kind of Candy Crush to actually physically interact, which was something that was made old school, you know, was just heartwarming. And it's like, do you like this? You know, did you want to take this home type of thing? My grandfather made this. And he's like, uh-huh. You know, and then Ashley comes downstairs and goes, you have one of those. I was like, oh, you're smart, kid. You know, totally just lit up for me. Oh, I'd love to have your grandfather's easel. Well, I'll give it to you. And, you know, through a friend that has a kid that was worthy. And then Ashley comes down. She's like, you got one of these. Oh, it was different. Thank God. And he's still going to get it. But sorry, if I think hard about it, I have friends and cast members and such that that we will get your book to.
I'll send one your way. You can look at it.
Yeah, definitely. Now, this little guy actually wants to be a YouTuber, so you might see him. His first little YouTube channel would be like, you know, plugging your book.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That would be good, you know, and it's fun. Like, everyone's like, that's so cold. It's marketing, and you're just in it for the money. It's like, no, we're doing this because we love this. People have no idea how much costs up front. You know, you have to give up golfing and beer and video games. You want to do this, you know, the money people spend on golfing, alcohol, and a bunch of stuff a year translates into like, well, that budget is gone and I will invest, you know, these hundreds of dollars, a couple of grand, just to do this. And it's so much fun. I love doing this. I'm exhausted, but I'm having a time of my life. Up to my eyeballs in debt.
Into a Corvette. Some people put all their money into
like restoring a car, you know, and people, your neighbors will walk by going, that's never going to run. It's like, who cares? I love my Chevrolet Arcadia and I'm going to restore it to its natural miniature form. You know, like, they're like, okay, should have went with the Mustang. Nah. Anyway, thanks for being on the show, sir. And we will see you next time on Attack.
Thank you.
Oh, welcome to the